We're in Parashat Be'alotcha, and today we want to talk about a concept that is required by all of us to have and to do, and is not so simple. This is called Midat Ha'anava, the attribute of humbleness. We spoke many times about the concept that it's extremely important to follow the Torah and to do mitzvot and to learn Torah, but the main student of the Arizal, Rabbi Chaim Vital, teaches in the book Sha'arei Kedusha that the mitzvahs are very important, but the main work that I need to do here in this world is called Tikkun HaMidot, to work on my character traits, to work on my midot, on my attributes. And today I don't want to talk about Tikkun HaMidot, but I want to explain that there are two character traits that all the rest of the character traits are born from these character traits. One is on the positive side, one is on the negative side. On the negative side, the original character trait is the character trait of Ge'ava, of pride. From pride, if Chas V'Shalom a person has a lot of pride, that will start birthing all the rest of the bad character traits, which the first generation that pride will birth will be anger and sadness. And then that, from anger and sadness, it will start birthing more and more and more bad character traits. On the positive side, the highest character trait is Midat Ha'anava, the character trait of being humble. If a person is humble, then it will start birthing more character traits that are positive. Now, who do we learn from the Midah of Anava? Nobody but the greatest, which is Moshe Rabbeinu. If you notice, many of our sages, many of our forefathers, they have a title. Abraham, for example, we call him Abraham Avinu. And then going down in the generations, you have Yosef HaTzadik. And many of our heroes, they have a title. David HaMelech. David was always going to go with the Melech. Shmuel HaNavi. Aaron HaKohen. We always attach a title. The title that Moshe got is Rabbeinu, our teacher. And he was known to be the most humble person ever existed. And this is the parasha where it's mentioned. Moshe Rabbeinu does not have any descriptions in the Torah. He's not described as a hero, he's not described as a powerful man, he's not described as a wise man. There's no descriptions on him. The only time that there's a description on Moshe, that he says on himself, that he stutters. That's the only description we find on him. And there's one description that is mentioned, that Ish Mitzri, Egyptian man, which our sages learn from that maybe means that he had a darker complexion. He was a Sephardi. You know, the Sephardis say, no, he was Sephardi. He was Mitzri, from Egypt. But we don't find any description on Moshe Rabbeinu. Only one description is that he was humble. Now, what do we want to learn from that? What is that going to do with me? Well, besides that, I have to be humble, which that in itself is a 3-month course, how to bring myself to humility, that I'm humble, not even 1% compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. What we want to talk about today is, should I know the values of myself? Because every individual has certain character traits and talents that are way above somebody else. One person is going to be extremely talented in the music department, an amazing musician. Another one is an artist. Another one is an amazing cook. Another one is an amazing teacher, educator. Every person has a talent. There's no such a thing that a person does not have a talent. And a character trait that is very, very positive. One person can be extremely smart, but very stingy. Or a person can be very charitable, but gets upset very fast. There's always going to be some negative and some positive. The point is that there's no such a thing that there's a person that doesn't have a talent. Now, when I have a talent, or two or three, should I be aware of my talent and my power, or should I totally disregard it and humble myself? Because if I know that I'm amazing in something, that's not going to bring me to be humble. That's just going to bring me to be, oh, I'm the best in the nation. So how does a person need to relate to himself? Do you need to recognize your talent or your positive character traits and be very strong about it, and which will chas v'shalom bring you to be proud about it, or to show off? Or one should say, no, you know what, I'm an amazing chef. There must be other chefs that are much better than me. So this is one thing that we want to talk about, because the Torah teaches me that I have to be humble. Not only that it teaches me that I have to be humble, if I'm not humble, meaning if you're looking at the two character traits, the two midot that are dominating in the positive and the negative side, if I am not humble, then what will be the result? That the pride will go up, the geva. That's nature. So if I want the pride to go down, then I need the humbleness to rise. This is how I balance it. If a person comes to me and tells me I have a problem with anger, or I have a problem with sadness, then after a quick analogy of their nutrition and their surrounding, it will go to the question, how much geva do you have? If you have a lot of geva, a lot of pride, most likely that's what births your anger or your sadness. Because if somebody comes and says something to me and I get hurt, means that he stepped on my pride. That's very simple. So I get hurt and I get angry. And then from anger it will start birthing more character traits. So one way of balancing it is working on your humbleness. People that they have a lot of problems with anger, assuming that they're not drinking 17 cups of coffee every day, and their diet is extremely unhealthy, and they're sitting next to a router that radiates all day long, and it annoys them, and many other things that will cause them to be angry, then one option where they get angry is that the midah of the anava is very little, and there's too much pride. So they get angry very fast, or sad. So in order to have a very good balance, the Torah doesn't only tell me that I have to be humble, it teaches me that the way for me to work on my midot is nourishing the midah of anava. So first we have to understand where am I holding here? How much anava should I have when I know I'm very good at something? Should I know? Should I recognize that I'm good at something? Or I should be a shmati and say, no, I'm the worst at everything and everybody's better than me? And because if I acknowledge the fact that I'm good in something, that will right away start pumping the ego. And what's going to happen? Too much pride. And then the anava starts diminishing. So in this parasha, we learn about the character trait of Moshe Rabbeinu that was very, very humble. And this is the first time that we get a description of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says, Va'ish Moshe, Haya Anav Mikol. And this is the first time that we find a description about Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, in order to kind of understand the concept, then first of all we have to raise a question. We spoke about it a couple of times, but how many books are in the Torah? Five, right? I'm not talking about the Tanakh, there are 24. We know of five books in the Torah. A few months ago in one of the classes I told you that there is an opinion that there are seven books in the Torah, and we're missing two Chumashim. Now, if you go to the Oral Torah, in the tractate of Shabbat, Masechet Shabbat, Rebbe, was the Tana, he explains and he says there are seven books in the Torah. We don't have five, we have seven. This is according to the Oral Torah. I'm not talking about now the mystical part of the Torah that actually explains that we're missing two Chumashim. And when Mashiach is going to come very soon, we will get another two books. We're missing a lot of information. In the entire Torah, we're missing a lot of information. Even in the oral Torah, we know we have six tractates of the Mishnah. Not tractates, the Sidre Mishnah. And really, we have 600. So we're missing 594. Not the tractates, the Sidrim. We have only six of them. So we're missing, this is how much from the oral Torah we're missing, and needless to say, from the mystical part of the Torah and the written part of the Torah. So when Mashiach is going to come, we're going to have a lot of time to learn a lot of Torah. But even in the oral Torah, in the Talmud, it says that we have seven books of the Torah. We learn it from a pasuk, from the book of Mishlei, that it says, Chotzba Amuda Shiv'ah, that the Torah is carved from seven pillars. But in the tractates of Shabbat, the Rebbe explains there that we have four books which are Bereshit, Shmot, Vayikra, and Dvarim. These are four books. And the book Bamidbar is really three books. And halfway into the book of Bamidbar, into the middle of our parasha Be'alotcha, that's one book. Then we have the parasha that is called Vayi Binso Aharon, that we're reading in this parasha. If you notice, if you ever looked in the Torah, the beginning of the parasha and the end of the parasha, I'm not talking the weekly parasha, I'm talking about the chapters in the parashot, that it has two nuns, the letter nun upside down. And that cuts the parasha, the chapter, from Vayi Binso Aharon. That's one parasha. This is one book, separate from the book of Bamidbar. And then, from the verse, Kum Hashem ve'efutzu evecha, that starts another part. Therefore, in the book of Bamidbar, it's divided into three books. So this is an opinion by Rebbe in the tractate, in the tractate Shabbat in the Gemara. This is the oral Torah, says that we have seven books. Now, in this parasha, it's kind of dividing the story in half. From the parasha of Bamidbar to our parasha, in the middle of the parasha, what do we read? That they're going into the desert and they're getting ready to go into the land. First, they get divided by tribes. If you remember, we learned in Parashat Bamidbar how they got divided in tribes. And not only that they're dividing in tribes, they're getting prepared to enter the land of Israel. And they're preparing for war. So the structure how the tribes were parked, it was their structure how they're going to go enter into the land into war. That's what we explained. They had flags, they had colors, they were literally preparing to go into the land. Mentally, emotionally. Not only that, it was a build-up. It was a couple parashot of a build-up of excitement. That's it, we got out of Mitzrayim, we got the Torah, now we're going into the land of Israel. Was a lot of action. And then at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu says goodbye to his father-in-law, Yitro, that makes a U-turn and goes back to Midian. And he says, that's it. The time has come. We're going into Eretz Israel, what was promised to us 400 years ago. And now is the time, and there's a lot of excitement. And then in one shot, everything changes. A downfall. And starts a chain of events, of problems, and disasters, and another sin, and another problem, and another sin, and another issue. So we have 2.5 parashot of excitement that we're going into the land of Israel. And then within one shot, one day, they just moved. One day, they had to move from where they were to the next location. It was a 3-day walk. They had what's called a kfitzat aderech. Hashem squeezed the land and they did it in one day. And suddenly everything starts. All the problems start. First, they start complaining that the diet in the desert is not a good diet. They start complaining, where's the zucchinis that we had in Mitzrayim? We had kishuim. And the fish, we had free fish. Now what are you giving us here? Starts all the complaints. After that, they start complaining, we want meat. This is not good, we want to chew meat. Okay, Hashem gives them meat. Doesn't matter, all the meat gets stuck in their teeth, but they're complaining. Then even a bigger disaster. Miriam talks Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. This is unheard of. Talking Lashon Hara about the leader? And then another disaster. The Meraglim, the spies, they go into Israel, they make a U-turn, we don't want to go. Then Korach, a disagreement with Moshe Rabbeinu, one after the other, disasters. In one day, after this unbelievable excitement of going into Israel, everybody's united, everybody's together, we got the Torah, we're real. One second, everything crashes in front of our eyes. And the result from that, of course, Hashem gets upset, and we're punished to be stuck in the desert now for 40 years. And what makes this change? Suddenly, disaster, a crisis. Literally crisis after one after the other. There's a story that I heard not too long ago. I met a Chabad rabbi who once had a person in his congregation. And was a very special Jew who used to come and pray. And one day he tells the rabbi, listen, I have something to tell you which I'm sure you're not going to like, but listen, I was hiding it from you for a long time, but I can't hide it anymore. And in a few months I'm getting married to a lady. And the rabbi is like, of course, ooh, this is good news. He's like, well, not for you, because the lady is not Jewish. And I didn't want to tell you that, because I knew you were going to try to convince me to separate from her, and I actually want you to come to the wedding. You're my rabbi, and I like coming here, and I didn't want to tell you, because I thought, I didn't know what you're going to tell me. Long story short, the rabbi tells him, listen, you're right, I am not happy about it. I don't know what to tell you. So I have a suggestion, I'm not going to tell you anything. In a few weeks, I'm flying to New York, because it's the time where all the Chabad emissaries meet. And I want you to come with me, and I want you to go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and ask him yourself, tell him yourself that you're about to marry a non-Jewish girl. He says, you think I'm going to fly now to New York to talk to your rabbi? To tell him that I'm marrying a non-Jewish girl? If you're not happy, he's going to be double not happy. Well, what is he going to tell me? He says, listen, what are you going to lose? Listen, go just hear what he has to say. Okay, worst case, you had a trip to New York. Sure enough, they fly to New York. The rabbi takes him to meet the Lubavitcher Rebbe on a Sunday. Every Sunday, he would stand out there and give out the dollars and meet people. And when it comes the turn of this individual, he comes to Lubavitcher Rebbe and he tells him, I'm engaged, and I'm getting married to a not Jewish woman. He is expecting now to get a hammer in his head. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe tells him, I'm jealous of you. Jealous of me? Why are you jealous? The Lubavitcher Rebbe tells him, because you were given a ladder by Hashem to come close to Hashem. Now, what's going to be the result? You choose. You choose whether to climb this ladder and get close to Hashem or not. And I'm jealous of you because I don't have this ladder. I don't have a Yetzirah. I don't have the problem that I need to deal with. I don't have now something that I have to overcome. You have it. Now, what will be your decision? That's your decision. If you choose to climb the ladder that Hashem gave you, you will go closer to Hashem. And if you choose not to climb this ladder, then you're not going to be closer to Hashem like you could have. Not an answer he was expecting to hear. And sure enough, he went home, and after a couple of weeks, he called off the wedding. The point is that the way to get connected to Hashem is through struggles. And a lot of people have a problem with that. This is the Torah. I need to struggle and suffer to get close to Hashem? Yes, because Hashem wants you to earn it. He doesn't want to give it to you. Before the world was created, it says in the Zohar that the souls were sitting around God and marveling the wisdom and enjoying enjoying, getting benefit, enjoying the wisdom of Hashem. And at some point, they felt very uncomfortable, and they told Hashem, listen, you know, all we do is you give us, and you give us, and you give us. We feel very embarrassed. We want to give something to you. The Zohar calls it bread of shame, Nehama deksufa. That they're like a poor person coming to your door and knocking every day, and you're giving them something to eat. The souls were embarrassed. They said, we want to do something. We want to earn what we're getting. So Hashem says, no problem. I'll create a world. I'll put you in bodies. I'll give you a list of mitzvot, and you'll earn it. Of course, the souls after 2 minutes says, no. We were joking. Are you taking us serious? But that was already too late, and Hashem created the world. The point is that Hashem says, I want you to earn the closeness to me. I want you to work hard so you will be the owner of your hard work, not just to give it to you. It's very easy for a parent to give something to their child, and the child will grow up a spoiled child. We have a friend that was born to a very wealthy family, and all her life, everything was given to her. She's now in her 40s, she can't function even. She's dependent on her father. And she doesn't know how to hold a job. She doesn't know how to do anything. She's so spoiled. She's an amazing woman, but so spoiled. Everything was given to her. She doesn't even know how to cope with anything in this world. All day long, she's from one psychiatrist to the other, from one retreat to another, because she doesn't know how to deal with things. A problem comes in her way, she doesn't know how to deal with it. So Hashem says, I don't want spoiled kids. I want you to earn it. I want you to say, I did it. Therefore, we have to struggle. Therefore, everything will come with a struggle. Because Hashem says, I want you to overcome this. I want you to battle it. I want it to be bitter and hard. And I want you to sweat. And then I want you to win and say, I did it. I was able to do it by myself. It was hard, but I did it. And then when you finally are happy and you said, I did it, then will come another struggle. And another smack to your face. And another one. You move the head this way, then a smack will take you that way. But the point is that to get close to Hashem, it has to be through struggles. And the point of break, in Hebrew it's called nefilah, that I fall. I walk, and I stumble, and I fall. And I constantly fall. I serve Hashem with all my might, and every 2-3 months, sometimes every 2-3 weeks, there will be a fall. I will fall, meaning that I will do a certain sin that will make me go 4 steps back. A man will say, that's it, I'm going to pray in a minyan now every day. 2-3 months is doing great, then one time he does something and oh, back to square one, doesn't go and pray anymore. We constantly have these failings. This is one example I'm giving with a man with a minyan, but every person. I know many, many people, they decide to start praying or to say Birkat HaMazon or to stop lying or to stop saying Lashon Hara. It works very well for 2-3 weeks, then up, I fall again. Then I have to get up. And the getting up is the hard part. But it's the falling that really exposes my connection to Hashem. If I have no connection to Hashem, the falling has no meaning. The failing. When I recognize that I failed, that actually shows, yeah, you have a connection with Hashem. And Hashem is the one who orchestras the situation that I will come to a point to fail, because Hashem wants to see how I'm going to get up. He doesn't care how I fail. He says, okay, you fail. Nothing happened. Now get up. Let's see how you're getting up. Let's see if you're going to get up, brush off the dirt, and move on. So our entire existence is from one struggle after another struggle after another struggle. Why? Because this is the ladder that takes me closer to Hashem. So we understand from that once we see that the Jews in the desert kept going through another struggle and another problem and another crisis, is just to teach us, yeah, Hashem says, listen, I don't want you to think that you're just getting everything for free. Now, if we're really going one struggle after the other, we're not going to start dissecting all of them, but the first one that they were complaining, they were constantly complaining about the food. They were complaining that they had free fish in Egypt. I don't even know what they're talking about. They were starving there. There were slaves there. They barely had even a material to work. Where do you come up with free fish? Fish? So, you know, there's one opinion that says, you know what, yes, the Niles, there was a very strong current, and every time that the current will come closer to the shore, it will bring all the fish to the shore. So yes, they did have free fish. But anyways, they were complaining about food. We didn't have meat, we didn't have zucchini, kishuim, we didn't have fish. Really what they missed is not the free food. They missed something that is called arayot. Arayot is forbidden relations. Up until the time that Moshe Rabbeinu came, there wasn't any law. You can marry whoever you want, whenever you want, how many you want. You can marry your sister, your cousin, your neighbor, your anybody. There wasn't any laws. And what caused it is it caused a whole mess when it came to forbidden relations. There wasn't any laws. And they were happy with that. They were happy with the fact that I can do whatever I want. Now, you know, people have different urges. Yeah, but I'm married, she's married, he's married. You know, even though it doesn't stop 90% of the population of the world, if there's a ring on the hanger or not, and they join each other in with no connection. But at the time, there wasn't any laws. We didn't have the Torah. We weren't prohibited in all the forbidden relations. So they missed that. They missed the fact. It's called that Mitzrayim was called Ervat Haaretz. Erva is a place that is not a modest place, a not clean place. Which, why was it called Ervat Haaretz? Because they were failing in Arayot, in Mitzrayim. They were constantly failing in forbidden relations. A woman and a man will just see each other and yeah, that's it, let's go. Doesn't matter, married, not married, related, not related. Then comes Moshe Rabbeinu and starts telling them, listen, you can't do whatever you want, there's rules here. You have to be married, it has to be at the right time of the month, and starts giving him all the rules. That's what they missed. Now they were embarrassed to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, I you took my fun away. So they were making it up like as if it was the food. I missed the zucchinis, I missed the fish, there was free meat. It wasn't free meat, there was free arayot, forbidden relations. There wasn't any prohibition there. So that's what caused the first thing. And this is basically the concept that Hashem took Israel out of Mitzrayim, but He didn't take Mitzrayim out of them. That's the problem that we have up until today. We were taken out of Mitzrayim, but Mitzrayim is still in us. And Mitzrayim is not necessarily the country, rather it's the concept that I'm stuck in my limitation. Mitzrayim comes from the word meitzav, a limit, and I'm struggling with my limitations. Some people, it's very extreme, they are addicted to drugs, alcohol, gambling, or whatever other thing. It's an addiction, this generation it calls an addiction. And some people, they're stuck in a limitation, it can be something simple. That they have to have 5 pieces of cake every day. I mean, if they don't have the 5th piece of cake, it's not something so bad. But they're depending. They need this cup of coffee. I need this. And more than that, there's many different things that limits me. That you know, today we have a new addiction. It's a phone. If somebody doesn't have their phone next to them for more than 3 seconds, they lose balance. Oh my gosh, I forgot my phone at home. I'm not going to be able to check my email for the next 3 minutes. So, we are also struggling with this limitation. So the first problem that they have, they couldn't go out. They went physically out of Mitzrayim, but their mindset was still stuck in Mitzrayim. I want to be free. I want to do whatever I want. Why do I need to be so limited? Then comes a different problem, is that at some point, Moshe Rabbeinu, he cracked. He was like, you know what? I quit. He comes to Hashem and says, you know what? I don't need to deal with this nation of, they're all whining all day long, they're complaining all day long, nothing that I do is good. I quit. Moshe Rabbeinu, so to say, said, listen, that's it. I had enough. I don't want to anymore. So Hashem says, okay, I understand. And I will give you 70 people that will be your assistants. And that will make your job much, much easier. So they take 6 people out of every tribe, forming a group of 70 men, These are called the Shivim Zkenim. And Moshe Rabbeinu gives them some Ruach HaKodesh, and they get the power of Nevuah in a very, in the Nevuah of prophecy, in a very minor way. But these selected men, they get some type of a Ruach, a spirit from Moshe Rabbeinu that allows them to be in a much higher level. Two of them are going even beyond the rest, and they become mamash prophets. This is Eldad and Medad, and it says that they were prophesizing in the camp. And now what happens? You have 70 prophets that just got, so to say, upgraded. They got a promotion. Moshe Rabbeinu gave them a little bit of Ruach HaKodesh, and they became prophets. Now, as all this scene is happening, two ladies are standing on the side and they're talking. One of them is Miriam and the other one is Tzipora. And Tzipora starts laughing and says, they think that's to solve the problem. Now these 70 men are going to have to divorce their wives. Miriam says, what are you talking about? So Tzipora says, yes, now these men are prophets. Since they're prophets, they're going to have to separate from their wife. Miriam says, are you hinting that you and Moshe are not together? Zipporah says, we're divorced. Miriam says, my brother divorced you and I don't even know about it? Oh, that's very spicy news. Moshe Rabbeinu was so humble, and it's nobody's business what he does. The reality is that Moshe Rabbeinu had to separate from his wife. In order for a prophet to have the power of prophecy, he can't be with his wife. At some point, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu actually gave Tzipora a get. He actually divorced her. In the beginning, he separated from her. Now what's going to happen every time that Hashem wants to talk to him? He's going to have to separate 3 days, go to the mikveh, get clean. Hashem says, listen, I'm talking to you here on demand. You have to be separated from your wife. That's it. And a prophet, before he can get prophecy, has to be 3 days, not be with his wife. Then he has to be clean, has to go to the mikveh. So Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, separate from your wife. That at some point he actually divorced her. Now Miriam says, ooh, this is juicy information. I didn't know my brother divorced his wife. And wait a minute, I'm also a prophet. And we have another brother, he's also a prophet. So Miriam calls Aaron and Moshe. She doesn't do it quietly. And she now comes and approaches Moshe and tells him, what, you think you're better than us? That you have to separate from your wife? We're not separated. Aaron is not separate. Why? You have to separate from your wife. Long story short, Moshe Rabbeinu sits and doesn't say anything. Miriam comes now and, so to say, attacks him, and she puts him on the spot, and she's waiting for an answer. And here the Torah says, "Ve'aish Moshe hayanav mikol ha'adam." He doesn't answer. He's quiet. He says, I don't need to give you an answer. I don't need to, it's nobody's business what I do. A person with a little bit of pride will be like, whoa, sit down, relax, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not as great as me, let's take a step back. He's so humble, he sits quiet, doesn't give an answer even. And the result right away that Miriam gets tzaraat, a severe tzaraat, to a point that she can't even go out of the tent. It's so embarrassing that Miriam the prophet is getting tzaraat. To a point that the entire nation has to wait 7 days for her to be clean. And then they understand that Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest. Even though Miriam and Aaron were a very high level, but Moshe Rabbeinu would just talk to Hashem freely. And yes, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest. Lo kam ke Moshe. And even when Mashiach is going to come, I know there's disagreements on this opinion, but they say that Mashiach is not going to be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu in prophecy. He's going to be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu than everything, but not in prophecy. That the lo kam kenavi ke Moshe, like Moshe Rabbeinu in the level of prophecy, there's not going to be like, nobody like him. And yes, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest. Now, how does Moshe Rabbeinu have to react when he's looking in the mirror? He's looking now in the mirror. Does he have to say, "Ooh, I'm the greatest"? What would it arouse in him if he says in the mirror, "I'm the greatest"? And he knows he's the greatest. There's no question here that Moshe knew exactly who it is. Moshe Rabbeinu knew, yes, I am the greatest of all. I speak to Hashem. I brought the Torah. I went up to the mountain. I went up to Shamayim 3 times. Who goes up to Shamayim 3 times and comes back? I went into Paro, into the Klipah, and took the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu knows exactly who it is. Who he is. Now, the Gemara in Masechet Chulin says there are 3 people in our history that are humble. And it says Shlosha Anavim Hem. The first one is Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu says, Vani Kafar Vaefer. I am like the ash and the dust of the ground. The next one is David HaMelech that says, Anochi Tolat Velo Ish. I am a worm. I'm not even a human being. And the third one, which is divided in two, which is Aaron and Moshe, that they says, Venachnu Ma. What are we? The third one is, I told you last week when we learned about the month of Sivan, that Moshe and Aaron are considered twins. They're considered like one, even though they're not twins. But both Moshe and Aaron said, they said on themselves, "V'nachnu ma? What are we? We're not even something." So it says that Abraham and David and Melech were very humble, but they still had some type of an existence. He says, "V'anochi tolat velo ish. Anochi, I am something. I am something." Moshe says, "I'm nothing. I'm not even existence." This is the level of humbleness that Moshe Rabbeinu came to. So, A, we want to understand, how does Moshe need to look at himself as the greatest of all, or he has to look in the mirror and say, "I'm a shmate, I'm worthless, everybody's better than me"? How does he reach to the level of anava? How can he look in the mirror and say, "I'm the greatest," and still be humble? It's a total contradiction. It doesn't make sense that he will say, "Yes, I know I'm the best, but let me be humble." It's kind of like doesn't even fit. How can I be humble knowing that I'm great at something? If I'm an amazing scholar, I'm an amazing teacher, whatever it is, and I know it, that by default arouses the pride in me that I'm the best. There's a story that after the destruction of the temple, it was a very hard time in Israel. Everybody lost their fortune, there wasn't even money there. And there's a story that Yochanan ben Zakkai was walking with his students, and as they're walking, they see from far away a woman that is picking up the droppings of an animal, cleaning, that's her job. And they're looking at her and feeling bad, you know, a Jewish woman should not be working like that. And then Yochanan looks at her, Yochanan ben Zakkai, and says, "What? You know who this lady is? Oy vavoy, this is the daughter of Nakdimon ben Gurion, the most richest man in the generation." There were 3 very wealthy people. He was one of them. The other one was Kalba Savoa, the father-in-law of Rabbi Akiva, the father of Rachel. It says that Nakdimon ben Gurion was so rich that he could feed the entire city of Yerushalayim for 3 years when it was under siege. And that was his daughter. And they couldn't understand how the richest person in the world, and Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai said, I officiated the wedding of this woman. You know that her father gave an adunya of 1 million dinarim? This is like $5 billion inheritance. And now she's picking up the droppings of an animal. When they asked her, "How did you get to this situation? Where's all these millions?" And she said, "My father was not giving enough charity." He was not giving enough charity? The story says that if he would walk on a carpet, he wouldn't walk on it again. They would take the carpet and donate it to somebody poor. That's how rich he was. That's how much charity he gave. He fed thousands of people. She says, yes, you're right, he did give a lot of charity, but not in the level what he could have. That's the difference. For a person that doesn't have a lot of money to give X amount of money of his fortune, that's one thing. But a person that is worth billions of dollars and he's only giving a few millions into charity, the millions, wow, it's a lot of money. But it's nothing compared to his ability. Therefore, he lost his fortune because he could have given much more than what he had. And he did. He gave a lot, but it was nothing compared to his ability. Therefore, he lost his fortune. And that's why his daughter ended up being cleaning the droppings of an animal. And it says that the secret of anava is that a person needs to live with the thought that he's not doing enough. If a person constantly says, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough, I can be better, I can be better, that brings him to be humble. So this is one opinion, one way to bring yourself into anava. And where do we learn it from? We learn it from Igeret HaRamban. If you read the Igeret HaRamban, which is actually highly recommended to read it at least once a week, it brings you to a point to understand that you how to become humble. This Igeret, this scroll, was written by the Ramban to his son, because he was, you know, high society. He wanted his son to be humble. And he teaches him how to be humble. So he has the attitude that you constantly have to feel that everybody is better than you, that you are a nothing, that everything that you do is not enough, and to diminish yourself. There's a story that there was once a big yeshiva, and the students, the great students, in order for them not to be developing too much pride, at the end of the day, they would go into a room and start hitting themselves, not physically, but saying, I am a nothing, I don't know anything, I'm not as great as I think. They would be hard on themselves to kill the ego. And they kept saying, I'm a nothing, I'm a nothing. One time comes a new student, and he sees what's going on, and he likes this shtick. So he goes with them to the room and starts saying, I'm a nothing, I'm a nothing. So they're telling him, whoa, 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 what, so fast you become a nothing? So this is one approach how to work on your midata anava. By constantly saying, you know, people are better than me, he's better than me, she's better than me, I'm not that great, I'm not 100% honest, I'm not 100% straight. That's one way that you diminish your midata anava. This is more leaning towards the path that is called Musar. That I have to constantly get pounded on my head, you're not that great. That will eventually make me nothing enough to understand that I have to be humble. But the Baal Shem Tov takes a different approach. And he says, no, there should be a different approach. And to understand this approach, I will share with you a story that is very, very interesting. A few generations ago, there's a very big Hasidut that is called Gur. There are many different Hasiduyot. The ones that are known are, of course, Breslev, Chabad, Satmer, maybe Tzanz. But one of the biggest Hasiduyot is called Gur. And many generations ago, when the first the Rebbe of the Hasidut passed on, they needed a processor, somebody who will come after. Now, originally, this Rebbe took over the Rebbe from Kotsk, but after that, they needed to find somebody to take over. So they looked around, and who did they found who would be the most suitable one? Was his grandson, who later on became a giant. He's known as the Sfat Emet. And they appointed him to be the Rebbe. Now this is a 19-year-old boy. Appointing a 19-year-old boy to become the Rebbe of this huge Hasidut? All the older Hasidim didn't like that. One of them came to him and told him, you're going to be our Rebbe now. Who made you? Who brought you? Well, how did you come to this level? So this was not a simple young man. And again, I told you later on, he was known to become a huge tzaddik. He's known as the Sfat Emet. And he told him, I'm just going to tell you a story. And he says, there was once a man who wanted to climb the mountain of the Everest. And he was preparing for years, building up his strength and working out and climbing, literally preparing himself for years. And then once he got to the point that he's prepared, he started climbing, and it took him half a year. He would go one place and another and this, and he worked real hard. Finally, after half a year, with the last breath, he reaches the top of the mountain, puts the last peg, pulls himself up, he reaches to the top, he's about to explode out of pride, and he sees a little boy there, just sitting there. He's like, how did you get here? I just climbed for half a year, I worked out for 3 years prior than that, I don't even have my last breath. How did you come here? So the boy told him, I was born here. I didn't have to climb. So the Sfat Emet told this old Chassid, I was born here. I didn't have to climb up. Sometimes you are born somewhere. Sometimes you are given this talent. Not sometimes. Each and every one of us has a talent. When you get a talent, you don't develop the talent. If you're a musician, you sit next to the piano, you'll start playing when you're 5 years old. If you are an artist, at 5 years old, you'll start painting. And my little boy, how he paints, this is a talent. I will sit 20 years in an art gallery, I will not be able to paint like that. If you have a voice, you are a singer, you have it from when you're 3 years old, you start singing. We get our talents. I don't have to work for that. I got it. I was born there. Therefore, the path that the Baal Shem Tov decides is not to diminish what I am. It's to recognize what are my qualities and to understand it. Yes, this is my quality, but not to let it take me to become pride, to use it. If Hashem gave me a quality, is to use it. With the story, going back to the story of Nakdimon Ben Gurion, Hashem gave him wealth. He didn't use it, so Hashem took it. If Hashem gives me a talent, is to use it to avodat Hashem. Not to say, oh, I am the best. Take this talent and use it. Do something with it. Don't waste it. And the knowledge, the fact that I acknowledge and I know what are my talents, that allows me actually to become humble. Because if I don't use it, then it will make me pride. But if I use it to avodat Hashem, if I apply it, then that's the way to keep me in, so to say, in a place that it's not going to become too much of a pride. And it all boils down that the Kadosh Baruch Hu says there's nothing wrong with pride. You know, when the Torah was given, there's a big question, why was it given on a mountain? So you know the whole story, we just finished Shavuot, and the story says that all the mountains were fighting. One mountain said, the Torah should be given on me because I'm the widest. Another mountain said, the Torah should be given on me because I'm the tallest. Every mountain had some type of argument. And Har Sinai didn't say anything. And Hashem says, oh, because he's the smallest, and he didn't say anything, and it's the smallest, it was the most humble, the Torah will be given on the mountain. So comes the different questions. If the Torah is about humility, and Hashem wanted to be humble, he should have given the Torah in a valley, not in a mountain. A mountain represents power and strength, and I'm out there, and I'm above the ground. It should be given in a valley. So the answer is no. Yes, you have to be humble, but it shouldn't take away from your power. You should be a mountain. This is why it's called Har Sinai, a mountain of you have to be humble. Somebody once told me when I first became religious, I met this individual not such a appropriate place. I was in the mikveh. We start talking. And he tells me, your name is very, very special. Because your name is like Har Sinai. Your name is Alon Anava. Alon is an oak tree. Strong, powerful tree. But your last name is Anava. So you are like a Har Sinai. You're powerful, but you're humble. Your name is a very special combination. So the Torah comes and tells me, there's nothing wrong with knowing who you are. Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly who he is. He didn't think of himself as a shmate. He looked in the mirror and says, I know who I am. I know that there's not going to be a greater prophet than me. You have to have some type of it's called a Hasidic pride. I have to know who I am. I have to know that I'm strong, I'm smart, I'm talented. But at the same time, it should not take me to a place that I feel that I'm better than anybody else. And even if I know that I'm better than somebody in something else, but Hashem gave me this quality to serve Him. Not to go and brag now, I'm the best at that. It's to be humble and says, yes, Hashem gives me money, so yeah, it gave me money to donate it, to help other people. He gave me wisdom, teach. Don't go and say I'm the smartest. Oh, I know the entire Shas off by heart. So the one approach of staying humble is saying, I'm a nothing. Everybody's better than me. Which I'm not, chas v'shalom, saying that this is the wrong approach. I also read the Igeret Ramban once a week. This is what I read once a week on Motzei Shabbat. I got it as a present from a friend of mine when I became religious, and it stuck with me. And in the Igeret Ramban, it says, read this Igeret once a week. It is a powerful approach to know that, yes, I might be good in this department. You, and all of you are better than me in many other things. So I'm good at one thing, but doesn't mean I'm better than you. So the approach of kind of making myself a nothing is a good approach, but you also have to have the approach of knowing who you are. You have to know your power. And when you know your power, you know how you have to serve Hashem. Because Hashem says, I'm going to give you a certain talent. You have to serve me with that talent. Don't use it for your own good. Don't use it to make your name greater. Don't use it to pump up your ego. Use it to serve me. And that's where I can take my power and make myself humble by applying it to Avodat Hashem. There was once a story with the Baal HaTanya that he had a very special Hasid. And his name was Pinchas Reizes. He's very famous. He was a very wealthy individual that he got all his money from his mother-in-law. He got his name because of the mother-in-law. His mother-in-law was named Rosa. And she was wealthy, and she told him, if you go to become a Hasid of the Baal HaTanya, here's all my money. Give it to him. Do charity with it. Support Torah. So he got the nickname Pinchas Reizes. And one time, he built a home, and he invited the Baal HaTanya to come and give a bracha, and he made a Chanukah bayit. He walks in there, he sees a mansion, a palace, rooms, everything made of gold, beautiful rugs, unbelievable palace. And I tell them, this is what happened. This, all these hours of learning Torah and Hasidut, this is what happened. This, you're bringing me to a palace? You can't live in a 4-bedroom apartment? All your Torah, all your learning, the entire approach of the Hasidic philosophy brought you to build a palace? I'm disappointed. So he wasn't such a simple individual. He tells him, no, I don't need this palace. But you know now what happens now that I have this fancy home? All the meetings of the city are done in my home because it's the nicest home. Now you know what it says in the Torah. Baal ha-me'ah u baal ha-de'ah. The one who has the fortune, the power, he has what to say. Now I influence everything that happens in the city. I have power now because everybody comes to me. They come and sit in this beautiful home, in this little palace, and I say, I'm the power here, I'm the money. I decide who's going to go where and who's going to do what. And I'm able to influence the entire city. And I can make and control the decisions. Therefore, I don't need this palace. I'm fine with living in the stables. I'm doing it because it allows me to control and to have power and to use it positive. Some people have power and they use it in a very negative way. I use it in a very positive way. So then, of course, Baal HaTanya was happy to hear that, but the point, the approach of the Baal Shem Tov is that you have to know your power. It doesn't mean that that should bring pride to you. But each and every one of us has a character trait, a powerful midah, an amazing talent. And the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu would look in the mirror and says, yes, I know I'm the best. I know there's nobody like me. But that means I have to be 100% dedicated to Am Yisrael. And that's what he was. He didn't have a wife. He actually divorced his wife. He was dedicated 24/7 to the people. So he took his power, and instead of making him pride, it made him humble, saying yes. And what I need to take from that is that I also have a character trait, a talent, something positive that is way beyond anybody else. And I have to, A, recognize it in me. And recognize it in me not to make me feel a little bit better than other people, is to serve another person. And the test in the anava will be, if when the person that needs my assistant in that department, if I will assist him, or if I will be like, of course, I'm much better than you. No wonder he's coming to me. So the lesson that we're learning here, which is one of the most important lessons, is that, A, I need to know who I am. I need to know my ma'alot, my virtues, my advantages over others. I need to recognize it. But the fact that Hashem gave it to me, that is what should make me humble. To be like, wow, Hashem made me this amazing person. I can be an amazing father, I can be an amazing educator, I can be an unbelievable chef, I can be an amazing singer, whatever it is. What should bring the Midat HaNavag me, that Hashem chose me. I can't believe it. Hashem chose me to be the one who's going to deliver the message through this channel. Doesn't matter how it's done. And that should be the power that allows me to be humble. Because if I'm not humble, then I'm going to lose it. Like this, in the rich individual that was very wealthy, he lost it because he didn't utilize his power to the fullest. And Hashem says, I'm giving you a talent, use it to the fullest. And you find what is great in you. Yes, you're going to have some bad character traits, which you have to refine. But then you also have a few good ones, which you have to recognize. And then apply it to your Avodat Hashem. And that's what we need to take from the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why we call him Rabbeinu, our teacher. Because it all boils down to how humble you are by knowing your faults. I need to know my faults, yes. We all have faults. Nobody's perfect. One person has faults in that department, and one in this department. I need to recognize my fault, to work on it. And it doesn't mean it's going to be worked on within a day. Sometimes it can take you 60 years to work on one midah. Person has the problem with anger, it will take him his entire life to work his in anger. The last day of his life, he'll be like, no, I'm not getting angry. Now I got the point. But I also have to understand, I have a very few talents and character traits, and instead of making it me feel too special, no, this is what I have to serve Hashem in. And there are many ways to serve Hashem. I'll tell you one more story. Because a lot of people say, listen, I have talents, but I don't see how to serve Hashem with it. And a few years ago came to me a young lady, and she told me, listen, I was born religious. I always kept Shabbat. I always ate kosher. I'm always modest. I'm, you know how they say, a goody two-shoes. I'm a good girl. You know, I'm really, my Yetzirah is very small. I pray, I help. I don't feel that I can do anything in Avodat Hashem. I feel like I'm a very below average individual. And I don't think that I have any type of special character to do Avodat Hashem, serving Hashem. And I told her, must be that you have something. She's like, no, I'm average. So it must be a talent. It must be something that you love doing. What do you love to do? So she told me, I love dancing. But I'm a little bit embarrassed. I will never dance in public. I dance in my room. And I told her, do you consider yourself a good dancer? She was like, yeah, I'm a good dancer. I just love dancing. So So I said, okay, so I have an idea for you. You live in a very small neighborhood in Brooklyn where people there are very poor, and every average family there has 8 kids and up, a Hasidic neighborhood, and there's barely any afternoon activities, and the kids are just piled on each other in these small apartments. Why don't you take all the little girls and teach them how to dance? Take yourself a small room, a basement or something, take them by age and teach them how to dance. They need an outlet. It's little kids. It's New York. 6 months of the year, it's freezing cold. They can't even go out to the street. They're in little apartments. They need an outlet. The mother needs a little bit of quiet. And you're going to give some joy to these little girls. More than that, you can be dressed modest and teach them that they should be modest too. You'll become their hero. And more than that, you'll teach them that you can be modest but still dance. There's nothing wrong with dancing. There's nothing wrong with being happy. And you'll plant in them the seed of this power of simcha. And I told them, you can change these little girls' lives. And that's what she did. And she opened, first it started in a little basement. Later on it became a studio. In the beginning everything was free. Then she maybe charged, Lily, I think like $3 a kid. Something little. And it ended up being such a success. She was like the hero of all these little girls. Dozens of 8-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 9-year-olds. She taught them how to dance. And she let them be free. And little girls, they need to be free. They need to jump up and down. They can't be in a box all day long. And she did it in such a special way that she taught them good midot. And even though that you should be free with yourself, but you should be modest, it ended up being an unbelievable success. These little girls looked up to her like she was their hero. And I told her, now you are a leader of a community of a couple dozens or hundreds of little girls that will grow up until the last day of their life. They will remember you, that you taught them how to dance and how to be happy and how to just throw their hands everywhere, whatever direction they want. And at the same time, they should be modest. And she applied it. And I said, look how you take something so simple and something that you just like. She wasn't a professional dancer. And she made something unbelievable from that I can guarantee to you that until the last day of these little girls of their life, they'll remember this, what she did for them. And from that, you can take that any person can take any character trait that they have, any talent, can be something simple, and teach it to another person, and that person, that's their lifeline. And it can be a child, can be an adult, can be anything. Hashem says, I gave you a talent, I gave you knowledge, I gave you a hobby. Everybody has something they love doing. One will be sewing, one will be painting, one will be arts and crafts, one will be gardening. It says, "Bechol drachecha de'eru." You can serve Hashem in many different ways. It doesn't have to be in a yeshiva. It can sometimes take a little child and teach the child something fun. That instead of having constantly the burden of school and the parents and Torah and mitzvahs, they need an outlet. A child needs an outlet. Even adults need an outlet. You know, not too long ago we had some event here, and I told my wife after, it was just for women, I told my wife after, no, how was it? She was like, it was nothing special. It was actually kind of boring. And she was like, but you know what? Even just not being for a woman, just not being with her kids for 1 hour, she doesn't care if it's boring. Just give me 1 hour of quiet. I don't care if the event was boring. And she says, yes, the event was boring. The person we brought wasn't exciting at all. But the women were just so happy for 1 hour quiet, not to deal with her husband or their kids. Sometimes you can be the one that initiates this outlet, this channel. Through that, a person, you know, finds a little bit of comfort. And every person has a talent and some type of a knowledge or character trait that can be addressed and applied in the right way to affect another person. And one needs to know their power. And I need to know, yes, I am very good at that. How am I serving the public and how am I serving Hashem with my talent? And when I do that, that's what actually brings me the real anava. I don't need to kill myself all day long that I'm a shmate. It is good to constantly hold myself in a position that I'm not that great. But also I should look at it from the other angle by saying, where am I utilizing my strength and my power? And we learned that from Moshe Rabbeinu. Bezrat Hashem, if each and every one of us can apply this method, that I should be powerful and the same way humble, then I can guarantee to you that each and every one of us will climb to a much higher level of connection with Hashem, because I will accept that everything that happens from Hashem, the good and the bad, which is in essence to make me humble. When Hashem is putting pressure and kvetching me, is to make me understand I have to climb the mountain. Some things I get, some things I have to acquire. It all boils down, if a person works on their midata anava, needless to say that the only thing that can birth out of it is happiness and serenity and good midot and calm and love for other people. And needless to say that if we just add a small percentage of that attitude in our nation and in the entire world, needless to say the world will be a much, much better place. We have enough ego in this world. We need to remove a little bit of the ego, and if the world will start moving to that direction, we will definitely make space for Mashiach to come, because Mashiach cannot and will not tolerate any ego. And when a person wants to prepare himself for the coming of Mashiach, one of the many things is to start diminishing the ego and the selfness, this yeshut, because Mashiach is not going to be able to be in the same place when a person has a little bit of an ego. So, Bezrat Hashem, we should learn to reach to that level, that we should all be humble and have the midata anava of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Bezrat Hashem, we should have a beautiful, successful, restful week.